it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed your lunch. The case is still with the state, so I'm going to turn to Mr. Saunders. Do you have another witness?
State calls Officer Tim Kenny.
Sir, if you want to just step up right over here, and then before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter, now before the court, so help you God?
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
First name is Tim, last name Kenny, K-E-N-N-E-Y.
Okay, then Mr. Saunders, the witness is yours.
Can you tell us how you're employed?
I'm a patrol officer with the City of Green Bay.
And how long have you been employed in that capacity?
12 years.
And is that the sum total of your law enforcement experience?
Yes.
Okay. I want to ask you about February 23rd of 2022. Do you recall if you were on duty on that day?
I do.
And did you have reason to assist Officer Russell with photographing an individual on that day?
Yes.
Okay. And where did you respond to take these photographs?
I was at the Green Bay Police Department, and he took me to an interview room.
Okay. And did Officer Russell have custody of an individual?
Yes.
And did you learn who that individual was?
Yes.
And who was that person?
Taylor Shabusiness.
Do you see that person in court today?
I do.
Could you point out where she's sitting for us?
She's sitting at the defendant's table.
And then what she's wearing?
Looks like a black cover with a black and blue blouse.
Okay. Thank you. I'd ask the record reflect the witness identified the defendant.
It will so reflect.
And then what were you asked to do with respect to photographing Ms. Shabusiness?
There were, I guess, cuts on her hands and blood on her clothing, which I was asked to photograph.
Okay. And did you document, I guess, the exterior clothing areas?
Yes.
Those were photographs that you took?
Yes, they were.
And what do you believe those to be?
These would be the photographs that I took of her external clothing.
Okay. Thank you. I'd move exhibits 82 through 86.
Any objection to 82 through 86?
exhibits 84 and 85 appear to be the same, so are you duplicity? So I'd object.
Okay. Well, what I'll do is I'll hold receipt of those exhibits. I'll hold a decision on receiving those exhibits till the break. Nonetheless, go ahead. Are you planning on publishing them?
I was.
Okay, let me see
the photographs.
Let me just see them. Mr. Frelick, you're objecting to duplication of which ones?
Exhibit 84 and 85, Your Honor. They appear to be the same picture form. Sweatpants.
Any response, Mr. Saunders?
They're different photographs. One is an overall of the legs, one it focuses on one leg in particular.
Yeah, I'm satisfied these photos are different. Mr. Frelick is right. They are taken of similar areas, but they're differently focused, the photos are different. So I'm going to overrule the objection. I will receive 82 through 86, and you can publish those to the jury if you so choose.
Thank you. Okay, Judge, can we get the lights dimmed?
Yep.
Just briefly. Thank you. Okay, Officer, are we observing Exhibit 82 currently on the screen?
Yes, we are.
Okay, and what does 82 depict?
That would be the outer sweatshirt she was wearing, which had dried blood on it.
Okay. And then 83, are we viewing that now?
Yes.
Okay, and what is 83?
The rear of the sweatshirt, which had dried blood on the lower part of it.
Okay. And then 84?
Would be the black sweatpants she was wearing.
And then 85?
The left leg of the black sweatpants.
Did you also observe a substance on that area?
Yes, there appeared to be matted blood in the area of the knees.
Okay. And then 86?
Would be the right leg of the black sweatpants. Okay.
And do exhibits 82 through 86, do those appear to be consistent with the clothing Ms. Business was wearing as you encountered her on February 23rd?
Yes.
Thank you, Officer. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Cross-examination, Mr. Frelick.
Officer Kennedy, you made some assumptions with regards to what was on those sweatpants, correct?
Correct.
You didn't do any testing, correct?
I did not know.
Do you make comments like that before you verify what the results are? Say practice?
As to what it appeared to be?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, you were given a police cell phone from Officer Garth Russell, correct?
Correct.
And there was some discussion when Ms. Shabizis was in the interview room about bringing her water, correct?
Possibly.
And then you were told, or someone was told, not to bring the water, correct?
I don't recall, but it's possible.
Now, you observed cuts on Ms. Shabizis' fingers.
I'm sorry, Mr. Frelick,
I
didn't hear.
Okay, that's okay. Sorry. Could you repeat that last question back, please? You did observe cuts on Ms. Shabizis' fingers and thumbs. Is that fair?
Yes.
Some of the cuts were quite deep. Is that fair?
Yes.
You used a cell phone to take the pictures that we just saw. Is that right?
Correct.
And then what did you do from there? Did you have to download it, or what did you do?
I returned the phone to Officer Russell, who advised that he would later upload the photos into the case.
Okay. Were you present at Eastman Avenue on February 23rd of 2022?
Yes.
And did you go there with Officer Russell and Lieutenant Buckman?
No, I left the station and went there. Officer Russell, I believe, stayed at the station, and I went to assist with the scene there then.
Okay. Were you part of the arrest of Taylor Shabizis or Scott Tholms?
No, I was not part of the arrest.
Okay. You were just there to provide cover?
I came after the fact, I guess, to assist with security and look for lack of a better term, body parts.
Okay. Did you find any?
I did not know.
And we're talking about the Eastman Avenue apartment, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And did you see the gold colored Town and Country minivan?
Yes.
And where was that?
I believe it was parked on the north side.
Right
in building.
Front, right in front of the building?
Yeah, in the parking lot on the north side.
Okay. Did you see anything unusual about the minivan?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Officer Kenny.
Redirect?
No, thank you.
Thank you. You can step down.
Yes.
State's next witness.
State calls Officer Leah Whitman.
Officer, if you want to step up over this way, and then before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her, raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter now before the court, so help you God. And please have a seat and state your name for the record.
All right. My name is Officer Leo Whitman, W-H-I-T-M-A-N.
And then the witness is yours, Mr. Saunders.
Thank you. How are you employed?
I'm employed through the City of Green Bay Police Department.
And how are you employed with the Green Bay Police Department?
I'm a patrol officer.
How long have you been employed in that capacity?
A little over 3 years.
Okay. Were you working as a patrol officer with the Green Bay Police Department on February 23rd of 2022?
Yes.
And do you recall being dispatched to a residence on Eastman Avenue on that day?
Yes.
And what was the reason you were dispatched to that location?
I was going to assist in picking up a suspect in a case that occurred on Stony Brook Lane.
Okay. And what did you do at the Eastman Avenue residence?
I just held a perimeter spot at first on one of the corners of the building, and then we were told that we were going to make contact with the vehicle that was seen in the parking lot, and I assisted in being like as part of the arrest team with that.
Okay. Which individuals were I guess, arrested at that point?
It was Taylor Shabizis.
Okay. After that, did you conduct a protective sweep of that residence?
I assisted in it, yes.
All right. And did you look at any other individuals inside the apartment?
Yes, a male by the name of Scott Tholms.
Okay. And when you were done doing the protective sweep, what did you do after that point?
I assisted with putting up crime scene tape around the van as well as kind of blocking off the entrance to the Eastman apartment complex, and then I started a crime scene log as well.
Okay.
For Eastman.
And what is the purpose of a crime scene log?
It's just to protect the integrity of the crime scene, making sure nobody that is unauthorized goes in to the crime scene, and everybody that is authorized to assist in the investigation signs in and then signs out so we can keep record of who goes in and out.
And was that done with respect to the Eastman Avenue apartment building?
Yeah.
As well as the van that was outside?
Yes.
And both areas were sort of cordoned off by crime scene tape as well?
Correct.
When you were completed with those tasks, did you have any other involvement in the case?
Yes, I was asked to go back to the police department and assist in collecting clothing that Ms. Taylor was wearing.
Okay. And what clothing did you assist in collecting from
I collected a black tank top, black sweatpants, a black bra, and then purple underwear.
Okay. And I guess, was that done in a separate area that wasn't being monitored, I suppose?
Yeah. We went into a separate interview room where there were no cameras, and my body camera was off, so we could give her privacy while she undressed.
Okay. And the items of clothing that Ms. Shabizis was wearing, those were the items you listed off earlier?
Yes.
And did you take custody of those?
Yes.
When you're taking custody items of evidence, such as clothing, what steps do you take to ensure the integrity of that item of evidence?
I've ensured that I was wearing gloves so I didn't get any of like my DNA or anything on the clothing. And then I packaged them in a brown paper bag due to them saying, I was told by a detective that there was possibly some red matter on there that could have been blood. We put them in a brown paper bag to make sure that if it was still wet, it wouldn't get contaminated by any kind of like plastic or anything.
Protocol you outlined, is that consistent with your training in how to collect items of evidence?
Yes.
And that's what you did in this case as well?
Yes, correct.
When you collected the, I think you said tank top, bra, sweatpants, and underwear, is that right?
Correct.
What did you do with those items once they were bagged?
I gave them to Detective Kemp.
Okay. And I guess, was he responsible for then entering it into evidence to your knowledge?
Yeah, yep. He took custody of it and entered it into evidence or the drying rack for clothing that's soiled in either like bodily fluids or anything. I'm not sure what he did afterwards.
And was Mr. Business provided alternative clothing?
Yeah, they provided yellow scrubs, I would call them, for her to wear. Oh.
Thank you, Officer. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Cross-examination, Mr. Frelick.
Thank you, Your Honor. Officer Whitman, did you observe cuts on Taylor Shabizis's fingers or thumbs?
Not that I recall. I wasn't looking. I was just focused on getting clothing and making sure she got dressed.
You initially went over to 2353 Eastman Avenue?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And that was on February 23rd of 2022?
Correct.
And did you ride with anybody?
Sorry.
Did you ride with someone or did you take your own squad car?
I was in my own squad car.
Okay. And then you met up with Officer Garth Russell?
Correct.
And Lieutenant Buckman?
Correct.
Anybody else?
I think there was a couple other officers there as well.
Was there an Officer Fisher there?
Yes.
And did you park a distance away?
Yes.
And then you walked up?
Correct.
Did you walk up on your own, or did you walk in conjunction with the other officers?
I walked up on my own.
Did you park quite a distance away so you could see what was going on?
Yeah, I parked in, I believe, the northwest corner of the parking lot, so I was still out of sight, but I could see the van and the entrance to Eastman from my point of view.
Were you told to be looking for a van?
Yes.
What kind of van?
It was just a tan Chrysler van. With the license plate of 580ZJZ.
At some point then you walked up to the van?
Correct.
The back of the van had snow on the back windshield?
From what I remember, yes.
Snow on the ground, correct?
Correct.
And when you walked up, it was dark outside?
Correct.
What time was this about?
Oh, I don't recall.
After midnight?
I can't really give a for sure time on when that happened.
Okay. Did you at some point hear anything or see anything with regards to lights coming on the minivan?
Yes, the lights, like the flashing lights came on, indicating either the van was being unlocked or locked at that time.
Okay. Did you walk, around the van?
Yes.
Okay. Is that before you heard the lights come on or saw the lights come on? Or
yes.
After? Before?
It was before.
Okay. And this van was, were there vehicles on either side of the van?
I don't recall.
Were numerous vehicles parked in front of the complex?
Yes.
Did you walk around the entire perimeter of the van?
No.
Okay. What part, which side did you walk on? The driver's side or the passenger side?
The driver's side.
Okay. Did you have a flashlight?
Yes.
Did you use it?
Yep.
What did you do with the flashlight?
I just watched the ground to make sure I didn't compromise any kind of evidence that might have been on the ground at the time.
Okay. Did you use your flashlight to look in the van?
I looked into the driver's seat, and that was it, to make sure it was unoccupied.
At some point, did you have contact with Officer Russell near the van?
Yeah.
Was he raising his voice as to be careful where you step?
Yes.
And then at some point then, did you see someone come out of the building?
Yes.
Who was that?
It was Taylor.
And what did you do then?
I just assisted with the arrest team. Okay. I didn't put handcuffs on, but I was there as a presence in case they needed assistance.
You walked up to the front door where Ms. Shabizis was, correct?
Correct.
She was standing on the porch under a overhang, correct?
Correct.
She was outside?
Correct.
She was cooperative?
Correct.
When you looked at her, her demeanor, was it calm?
Yes.
Did she cooperate with you and the other officers?
Yes.
Was it Officer Garth Russell? Was he the one that put handcuffs and arrested her?
I don't recall.
Did you see Ms. Shabizis fighting?
No.
She was compliant?
Yes.
At some point then, did you see Officer Russell take her back inside the apartment building and go over by the stairs?
I don't recall that.
At some point, did you and other officers become concerned for your safety?
No.
Did you have to draw your service revolver?
We did, yes.
You did?
You we took did.
You took your duty weapon out?
Yes.
Okay. And then did you hear yelling for a male to come out of apartment one?
Yes.
And that was Scott Tomes?
Yes.
And were you part of that process?
Briefly.
Did you assist Officer Russell with bringing Ms. Shabizis to the squad car?
No.
Okay. He did that on his own?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Did you assist the other officer that was dealing with Scott Tomes?
Yes.
Okay. After all that was done, then were you told to go back to the station?
Yes.
Who told you to go back to the station? Do you know?
I believe it was Detective Kemp called me.
Who did?
Kemp.
Okay. Kevin Kemp.
Yes.
Detective, right?
Detective, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Did you do a protective sweep?
I assisted with it.
Okay. Did you find any body parts or anything that was cause for concern?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. And you helped with doing the crime scene log?
Correct.
Is that where you log people in and log people out?
Yes.
Did you put up crime scene tape?
Yes.
Where?
It was around the van and then around the front entrance of Eastman to kind of block that part of the crime scene off.
You did all that before you left, correct?
Correct.
How long do you think you were at Eastman Avenue?
I don't know, maybe an hour.
Okay. And then you collected these items, the tank top, the sweatpants, the bra, and the underwear, correct?
Correct.
And they were all sealed in a brown paper bag?
I did not seal them. I just put them in the brown paper bag and gave them to Detective Kemp.
Okay, and then he dealt with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Redirect?
No, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. You can step down. State's next witness.
State calls Kevin Scott.
Sir, right up this way, and then before you have a seat, if you could just turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter now before the court, so help you God?
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
My name is Kevin Scott.
Okay, and Mr. Lindsay, the witness is yours.
Good afternoon, Mr. Scott. Can you state for the record how you are employed?
I am a DNA analyst at the Wisconsin State Crime Laboratory in Madison.
And how long have you worked as a DNA analyst?
I've been there for about 10 years.
And is all of your work as a DNA analyst, is that with the State Crime Lab in Wisconsin?
Yes, it is.
Could you briefly address your educational background and training that you've had that qualifies you to work in that capacity?
Yes, I received a Bachelor of Science degree majoring in biochemistry from UW-Madison. When I was first hired at the lab, I received approximately 1 year of in-house training at the lab that covered every aspect of DNA analysis that the lab uses. In addition to that, I receive at least 8 hours of annual training every year.
And is there any certifications that you or your laboratory hold in order to conduct DNA analysis?
Our laboratory is accredited. Accreditation is a process in which the lab undergoes external audits by an outside agency in order to ensure that we are following our own procedures and established procedures in the forensic science community.
Now, you mentioned previously that you are required to have about 8 hours of training every year. Do you do all of the training that is required of you?
Yes, I do.
And is it fair to say you typically have more than 8 hours of training in a year?
Some years I might. 8 hours is just the minimum.
Okay. Do you, as part of your work with the crime lab, put together a statement of qualifications?
Yes, I do.
What is a statement of qualifications?
A statement of qualifications is similar to a resume. It's a document that we use at the lab that outlines my position, training, and experience.
Scott, I'm showing you what's been marked as Exhibit 87. Can you review that document for me?
Yes, Exhibit 87 is a copy of my statement of qualifications.
You believe that is an accurate and up-to-date statement?
Yes, it is.
I move for admission of Exhibit 87, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No objection.
All right, 87 will be received.
Mr. Scott, can you discuss what your general duties are as a DNA analyst at the lab?
Yes. As a DNA analyst, I examine crime scene evidence for the presence of bodily fluids, such as blood, semen, or saliva. I then attempt to extract or release DNA from those bodily fluids or from any other source of DNA, such as skin cells from touched items. I then attempt to generate a DNA profile. I analyze those DNA results, and I make comparisons to DNA standards that are taken from known individuals. I will then prepare a written report of my results and conclusions.
And can you, do you have any sort of estimate as to how many times you have conducted analysis of DNA samples?
I've worked somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 cases, and each case can consist anywhere from one item of evidence upwards of several dozen, depending on the case.
Is it fair to say that in your career you've analyzed thousands of DNA samples?
Yes, I have.
And have you testified in court in the past regarding your findings as to your DNA analysis?
Yes, I have.
Have you been accepted as an expert witness in courts in the state of Wisconsin regarding DNA analysis?
Yes, I have.
Mr. Scott, as part of your work with the State Crime Lab, were you asked to assist in an investigation of a homicide case from the city of Green Bay with a case name Shad Therian?
Yes, I was.
And in terms of how cases are identified at the lab, can you talk about what the lab does when they receive a request from law enforcement to analyze for DNA?
Yes. When a case is submitted to the lab, law enforcement will bring the evidence to the lab or otherwise ship it to the lab. Our evidence technicians will give that case a crime lab case number, and each item submitted under that case will get a crime lab item designation. Each item gets its own item letter, starting with letter A. Next item would be letter B, and so on.
Did you have any more? I apologize if I cut you off.
Once I'm assigned to a case, I will then pick up those items of evidence, bring it down to my lab bench, and then start the physical examination of the evidence at that point.
When law enforcement submits a case to the lab for DNA analysis, are there any sort of submission guidelines that the lab gives to law enforcement agencies?
Yes, we do have submission guidelines for evidence that's submitted to the lab. This attempts to reduce the number of items that submit to the lab as a resource management tool, just so we aren't overwhelmed with a large number of items. For a homicide type case, we ask that the submitting agency, the law enforcement agency, try to limit their first round of submission to 10 items of evidence.
Are there occasions where a law enforcement agency may then submit subsequent items to the lab after the initial 10 are sent?
Yes, that does occur sometimes.
And what are typically the circumstances in which a law enforcement agency might submit things in addition to the 10?
It will depend on the case. Most often it's because a probative link to a possible perpetrator has not been established yet.
Is it typical that once a probative link to a perpetrator is established that no additional items are sent to the crime lab?
Again, it will vary by the case, but I would say typically that's true.
Essentially, what is the purpose or the investigative purpose of using DNA analysis in a case? Or can that vary by case?
Yes, that can vary by case.
Okay. Obviously, is one of the primary goals to identify a potential perpetrator?
Yes.
And typically, once that has been established, you may not receive additional submissions unless there's some other specific evidentiary purpose for submitting items to the lab.
Objection, Leedy.
Overruled. Answer if you can.
Can you please repeat the question?
Is it typical then that once that identification has been made regarding a suspect, that additional items would not be sent to the lab unless there's some other specifically identified purpose for the testing?
Generally, that's true, yes.
In this particular case, or actually I'll ask before this particular case, generally do you prepare a report regarding your findings of DNA analysis?
Yes, I do.
And in this particular case, did you prepare such a report?
Yes, I did. Yes, Exhibit 88 is a copy of the DNA report that I authored in this case, dated April 1, 2022.
What is the lab case number that's associated with this case?
Our Crown Lab case number is M22-636.
And what is the case name?
The case name is Shad Rocktherian.
Mr. Scott, does the report outline the items that you received from law enforcement for purpose of analysis?
Yes, it does.
And what items were received in this case?
I received a buccal swab standard that was reportedly recovered from Taylor's business. That was item A. Item B was right-hand swabs reportedly recovered from Taylor's business. Item C was left-hand swabs reportedly recovered from Taylor's business. Item D was oral swabs reportedly recovered from Shad Therian. Item E was swab reportedly from a blade. Item F was a swab reportedly from a red substance inside of a box. Item G were swabs from a red substance on a bedroom light switch. Item H was sweatpants. Item I was penile swabs reportedly recovered from Shad Therian. And item J was a swab reportedly from a dildo.
I would note you listed several items that were obtained. Many of those are swabs. One of those items was not a swab. Can you talk about the difference between receiving swabs and receiving an item?
Yes. Typically, the evidence submitted to the lab will either be an item, like a physical item of evidence, such as the sweatpants in this case, or it can be from a sample taken from an item of evidence by the law enforcement agency, which is typically a swab of an item. A swabian is an oversized Q-tip that is moistened with some water and rubbed up against the item of evidence, hoping to transfer any DNA that's on the item of evidence onto that swab. And then we use the cotton head from that swab for our further DNA processing. And depending on the law enforcement agency and how they do things, either those swabs or the full item of evidence is submitted to the lab.
And with respect to item H, the sweatpants, where you receive the actual item, what is your process then for processing and analyzing an item such as that?
Once I pick up the item of evidence, I will perform a physical examination, typically looking for any staining that may be on the item that may be from a bodily fluid that's relevant to the case. This is commonly reddish-brown color staining, which could be from blood, which is what I was examining the sweatpants in this case for.
Is receiving a swab versus receiving the item, is one of those forms better or worse than the other, or are they both commonly accepted forms?
They're both commonly accepted forms.
Yeah, prior to conducting DNA analysis, do you sometimes do screening on the items that you receive?
Yes, screening is what we refer to the physical examination and testing for bodily fluids and sample collection from the items.
And did you do any such screening in this case?
Yes, I did.
And what screening did you conduct?
So for this case, I was testing some of the items for the possible presence of blood. From the right-hand swabs, item B from Taylor Shoe Business, and the left-hand swabs from Taylor Shoe Business, item C, blood was identified on those swabs. Then from a few other items, the swab from the blade, the swab from the red substance inside the box, the sweatpants, and the swab from the dildo, presumptive testing for blood was also present, or presumptive testing for blood was positive on those four items.
Can you describe the difference between actually being able to identify blood with one form of testing and then the presumptive testing with respect to the other items?
Yes, at our lab we commonly use two different types of testing for blood. One is referred to as a presumptive testing for blood. This is a very quick test that relies on a color change after dropping a couple chemicals on the sample, and it doesn't require very much sample to be taken. However, that test is called a presumptive test because there are other substances out there that could possibly cause a positive result even if blood is not present. This is some of the things that might cause that are rust, some metals, and some vegetable extracts could induce a positive result even if blood is not present. However, that is the more typical test that we use at our lab just because of how quick and how little sample it uses. Another type of test that we have is a confirmatory test, which confirms the presence of blood on an object. For this case, I performed that confirmatory test on the right and the left-hand swabs. Those were both positive, and I concluded that blood was identified on those swabs.
And with respect to the items where you have the presumptive test, is that the only test that you did was the presumptive test? That is, you didn't then use the confirmatory test on those items?
Correct.
And can you explain, is there a reason why you make the choice to do presumptive with one and confirmatory with the other items?
It can depend on the sample. If the presence of blood is very important to a case, I might choose to perform that confirmatory test. Or if for some reason I might think that a presumptive test was positive due to one of those things that might cause a false positive result, I might choose to do a confirmatory test. It could also just depend on the amount of sample I have available to me.
Were there items where either a confirmatory or presumptive test for blood was conducted where blood was not located?
Yes. From the swabs from the red substance on the bedroom light switch, that test was negative, and I concluded that blood was not detected on those swabs from the light switch.
And are there other types of presumptive testing that can be done for other substances?
Yes, we can also test for saliva and semen.
And did you conduct any presumptive testing for saliva in this case?
Yes, I did. I performed a presumptive test for saliva on the penile swabs from Shad Therian. That test was positive, and I concluded that presumptive testing for saliva was positive on those penile swabs.
Is there a confirmatory test for saliva like there is for blood?
We do not have one at our lab.
So there's merely the presumptive testing for saliva, and that is what you did on the penile swabs?
Yes.
And did you do any testing for the potential presence of sperm?
Yes, I did.
And where did you conduct that test?
I tested the penile swabs from Shad Therian, and I did not identify sperm cells. I concluded that sperm cells were not identified on the penile swabs.
And those are all the, is that all of the screening tests that you did prior to DNA analysis?
For bodily fluids, yes.
And just to confirm, you do that prior to the DNA analysis?
That's correct.
Subsequently, did you then perform DNA analysis on the items that you received?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Just briefly, before we go into those specifics, can you describe for the jury what DNA is?
Yes. So DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid, and it is the genetic material that is present in all living organisms. It is the blueprint that codes for all structures and functions within our body. DNA is inherited, so you receive half of your DNA from your mother and half from your father.
And why is DNA a valuable tool in criminal investigations or in identifying potential individuals?
Yeah, so DNA is valuable because different people will have different DNA profiles. With the exception of identical twins will share the same DNA profile. Almost everybody else will have different DNA profiles, and that allows us to compare DNA profiles taken from items of evidence to DNA standards that are taken from known individuals to see if those profiles match or not.
And what are the common sources of DNA that we can find in the human body?
DNA is found in nearly every cell of the body. Bodily fluids such as blood, semen, and saliva are very good sources of DNA. So if those bodily fluids are present, I would generally expect to find DNA as well. DNA can also be found in other cells such as skin cells that are commonly left behind on touched items.
Is the DNA from a particular person the same throughout their body despite the source of that DNA?
Yes. Regardless of which specific source or bodily fluid your DNA comes from, your DNA will be the same throughout your body.
Now, turning back to the DNA analysis that you conducted in this case, can you first describe the autosomal STR DNA analysis that you conducted in this case?
Can you please...
Sorry,
can you please clarify your question?
Sure. Well, what is autosomal STR DNA as opposed to other types of DNA like YSTR DNA analysis?
Yes. So at our lab, we have two different types of DNA analysis available to us. The more common one is referred to as autosomal STR DNA analysis. Autosomal refers to the DNA that everybody will have, both males and females. Everybody has 23 pairs of chromosomes in their body. 22 of those are referred to as autosomal chromosomes. And the last pair are referred to as the sex chromosomes. So males will have an X and a Y sex chromosome, and females will have two X chromosomes. When we perform the autosomal analysis, we generate a DNA profile from any DNA that's present in that sample. The other option available to us is YSTR testing. YSTR testing generates a DNA profile only from the Y chromosome. So since only males have a Y chromosome and females do not, that YSTR testing will essentially ignore any female DNA that's present in a sample and only generate a profile from male DNA that's present. This is very helpful in samples in which there is a lot of female DNA and a very small amount or relatively small amount of male DNA compared to the female DNA. So if that male DNA is relevant to the case, we might want to perform this YSTR testing to try to help us determine the DNA profile from that Y chromosome. Now, unlike autosomal DNA profiles, YSTR profiles are not as discriminating because they are not unique to any one individual. While most males will generally have different Y profiles, it is possible that unrelated males could just happen to share the same Y profile by chance. And we do expect that all paternally related male relatives, so male relatives who share a father-son type relationship, we would expect that they would also share the same Y profile as well.
So prior to doing your DNA analysis in this case, is there something that you need to do to prepare the samples to be analyzed?
Yes. So once I have my item of evidence, I will take my sample for DNA analysis and then extract or release the DNA that's present in that sample. This is done by adding some water with some chemicals and heating it up in order to break open those cells and release the DNA. I then purify the DNA sample by removing everything else that's not DNA. And once I have my purified DNA extract, I will then quantify that sample to see how much DNA is present. If there is a sufficient amount of DNA present in that sample, we will then try to generate a DNA profile. And depending on how much total human DNA or male DNA that's present in the sample, we will then choose at that point whether we attempt to generate an autosomal profile or a Y profile.
As you began your analysis of the individual items in this case, did you note items that appeared to be sort of what you might call standards for the individuals that were involved in this case?
Yes, I did.
And which items were those?
So item A was a buccal swab standard reportedly from Taylor Shop Business. A buccal swab is a swabbing of the inside of somebody's cheek, hoping to gather DNA from that person's mouth. We then process that buccal swab standard in the same manner as an item of evidence to generate a DNA profile, and we use that DNA profile as that person's DNA profile for the purpose of comparisons. I also received oral swabs, item D. Those oral swabs were from Shad Therian.
And were you able to develop single source profiles for both item A1 and item D1?
Yes, I was.
And what is a single source profile?
So when we generate a DNA profile, that DNA profile will either be single source or from just one individual, or it could be a mixture of DNA. So that DNA profile could have DNA from multiple individuals.
Which of those are more easier to work with when doing comparisons?
Typically, single source profiles are easier as we can just do a direct comparison between that single source profile and the profile from the DNA standards in order to see if they are consistent with each other or not.
So once you develop those single source profiles, presumably both for Taylor Shop Business and Shad Therian, did you then conduct comparisons for subsequent items that were analyzed?
Yes, I did.
And specifically as it relates to item B1, what was item B1?
Item B1, to back up a little bit, item B were the right-hand swabs from Taylor Shop Business. When I took a sample from that swab, I just cut a little bit of the swab off for DNA analysis. That cutting from the swab was called item B1 for the purposes of tracking within our system. So item B1 is also from the right-hand swabs from Taylor Shop Business.
And what did your analysis, what were the results of your analysis with respect to that item B1?
I developed a three-person mixture, so three different individuals contributed DNA to this mixture. At least one of those three individuals was male. At that point, I analyzed this DNA mixture using a computer program called StarMix. StarMix is a tool that we use at our lab to help us interpret DNA mixture profiles. It works by modeling the DNA mixture by trying to determine the most likely individual contributor profiles that, when mixed together, can explain the mixture that we observed or that we detected from the item. So at the end of the interpretation, what we have is a list of the most likely individual profiles that can explain this mixture. Once we have that list, we will then compare the DNA profiles from the people thought to be involved in the case in order to see if they do have one of those possible profiles. If they do not have one of those possible profiles, they are excluded as a possible contributor to the mixture, meaning that DNA mixture cannot be modeled using that person's DNA profile. Therefore, their DNA is not present. If their DNA is one of the possible profiles, then we will get a likelihood ratio. And what that likelihood ratio is a level of support for the strength of the comparison. Essentially, the higher the likelihood ratio is, the more support there is that that person's DNA is present in the mixture. And the lower the number is, the more support there would be that that person's DNA is not present in the mixture. So for this particular sample, the right-hand swabs from Taylorship Business, I analyzed this assuming a three-person mixture using StarMix. I also assumed the presence of DNA from Taylorship Business. Since this was a swab from her hand, we would expect to find DNA from her. It did also appear that her DNA was present in the mixture. So when I analyzed this mixture, essentially I told that computer program that one of those three contributors is Taylorship Business, so then it would model the other two contributors. So once we had that interpretation and made the comparison to Shad Therian, I found that it is at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe this DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Taylorship Business and Shad Therian and one other person, than if it were a mixture resulting from Taylorship Business and two random unknown people. That provides very strong support for inclusion, or very strong support that DNA from Shad Therian is present in the mixture.
Now, the way in which you report this data as a ratio, is that the standard process when you have DNA mixtures? That is, does the lab actually tell someone that a person's DNA is present, that it is the source of DNA, or does the lab always report it out as a ratio like this when you have a mixture?
It will depend on the type of mixture and how much DNA each contributor contributes, but when this StarMix computer program is used, then yes, this ratio is how we will report out all comparisons.
Okay. Is there any way to sort of quantify for the jury or describe how big of a number 1 quadrillion is?
1 quadrillion would be 1 followed by 15 zeros. It's also 1,000 trillion.
Okay. Now, was that 1 quadrillion, at least 1 quadrillion times, is that the exact number of the ratio in this case?
No, the numbers can go much higher. We cap that likelihood ratio at 1 quadrillion just to keep that number down in a range that's more recognizable.
So it's possible that in this case the likelihood was even greater than 1 quadrillion. You simply will never report a number that's higher than 1 quadrillion.
That's correct.
And did you follow that same process for the left-hand swabs from Taylorship Business in item C?
Yes, I did.
And were you able to develop a mixture in that case as well?
Yes, I did. From the left-hand swabs, I developed a two-person mixture, so two different people contributed DNA to that mixture. Again, one of those two people appeared to be Taylorship Business, so when I analyzed this mixture using StarMix, I assumed the presence of DNA from Taylor. When I compared the DNA profile from Shad Therian to that mixture, I found that it was at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe that DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Taylorship Business and Shad Therian than if it were a mixture resulting from Taylorship Business and a random unknown person. This also provides very strong support for inclusion, or very strong support that DNA from Shad Therian is present in the mixture.
And item B and C, the two items that we just talked about with respect to the DNA analysis, again, were those the two items that you had tested for the presence of blood as well?
Yes, blood was identified on those two items.
Okay. With the confirmatory test?
Yes.
And so again, the result in terms of the 1 quadrillion times, that's essentially the maximum number that you could reach, and that was in item C1 as well.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's move on to item E. What was item E?
Item E was a swab from a blade.
And what sort of analysis did you conduct with respect to item E?
I developed a single source male profile, so just a DNA profile from one male individual. I then compared that male profile to the profiles I developed from the standards in this case, and I found that that profile is consistent with the profile from Shad Therian. Now, anytime we make a direct comparison between two profiles and find that they are consistent with each other, I perform a statistical analysis on the evidentiary profile in order to estimate roughly how rare or how common that profile is in the general population. If that profile is more rare than 1 in 7 trillion individuals, with 7 trillion being roughly 1,000 times the world's population, if that profile is more rare than 1 in 7 trillion, I will state that that individual is the source of that DNA. So for this particular sample, the swab from the blade, that single source male profile, I concluded that Shad Therian is the source of that DNA.
And item E, is that a test that you, or is that a swab that you also did a presumptive test for blood on?
Yes, that test was positive for the presumptive test for blood.
Moving on to item F, what sort of testing was conducted on item F?
Item F was a swab from red substance inside of a box. I developed a two-person mixture, so two different people contributed DNA to that mixture. At least one of those two was male. For this particular mixture, one of those individuals contributed the vast majority of DNA to the mixture, and I was able to determine the major male contributor, which is the DNA profile from that one male individual who contributed the vast majority of DNA to the mixture. I then compared that major male contributor profile to the profiles from the DNA standards, and I concluded that Shad Therian is the source of that major male contributor profile. Now, there was a minor contributor as well. However, the amount of DNA that we detected from that minor contributor was very low, and it was not suitable for comparisons.
That the idea that there might be a minor contributor that is contributes such a small amount of DNA to a mixture, is that something that you encounter regularly in your DNA analysis?
Yes, we do.
Just generally, how is it possible that small amounts of DNA can be found on swabs of certain items? How do we transfer our DNA from one place to another?
Object calls for speculation, Foundation, Your Honor.
Overruled.
So just to clarify, are you asking like how DNA transfer occurs?
Correct.
So when we think of DNA transfer, we tend to think of it in terms of primary transfer and secondary DNA transfer. So primary transfer would be the direct transfer of DNA to an object. So if I handle an object, such as my water bottle here, some of my DNA might transfer to the water bottle through that direct contact. That would be primary transfer. Secondary transfer is also possible, in which DNA is transferred through an intermediary object to an object that I never directly handled. So if some of my DNA is on this water bottle and it comes into contact with another object, it is possible that some of my DNA might transfer to that second object, even though I never had any direct contact with it.
In that DNA transfer that you talked about what is possible, does DNA always transfer when someone handles an item?
No, not necessarily. There are a number of a number of things that can influence how much, if any, DNA is transferred. But just because an object is handled, that doesn't necessarily mean that enough DNA will transfer for us to be able to detect. It can vary by the person as well. Two different people could handle an object for the same amount of time, and we might only detect DNA from one and not the other.
I think you mentioned earlier certain substances like blood, semen, saliva tend to be good conveyors of DNA. Is that true?
That's correct. Bodily fluids such as blood, semen, and saliva are very good sources of DNA.
So are you familiar with the term touch DNA?
Yes.
What does that generally refer to?
Touch DNA generally refers to DNA that is transferred to an object through touch or through skin cells that are left behind on that object during handling.
And generally, if we were to compare touch DNA as opposed to the transfer of the bodily fluids that we suggested earlier, which are more effective at transferring DNA from one place to another?
Typically, bodily fluids would have more DNA than touch DNA, but of course it could depend on how much bodily fluids there are and or how much touch DNA is on the object.
Thank you. After that educational aside, I'll transfer back to the report, and I would ask you to discuss item G in the analysis that you conducted on item G.
Item G was swabs from a red substance on a bedroom light switch. I developed a three-person mixture, and at least two of those three individuals were male. And I analyzed this, assuming three individuals, using StarMix. When I compared the DNA profile from Taylorship Business to this mixture, I found that it is at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe that DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Taylorship Business and two other people than if it were a mixture resulting from three random unknown people. This provides very strong support for inclusion, or very strong support that DNA from Taylorship Business is present in the mixture. I then compared the DNA profile from Shad Therian and also found that it is at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe that DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Shad Therian and two other people than if it were a mixture resulting from three random unknown people. This also provides very strong support for inclusion, or very strong support that DNA from Shad Therian is present in the mixture.
And then moving to item H, what was item H?
Item H was the sweatpants that I examined in this case.
And what did you do to then further evaluate those sweatpants prior to doing DNA analysis?
I examined the sweatpants looking for staining that appeared reddish-brown color. That could be blood. I did observe staining, reddish-brown staining on the sweatpants. And I ended up taking four different samples from four different reddish-brown stains.
And again, did you do presumptive testing for blood on that item?
Yes, I did. All four of those stains were positive for the, or they were presumptively positive. So presumptive testing for blood was positive on those sweatpants.
And the four different swabs that you generated, then we'll take those one by one. Can you first address item H1 and the analysis that you conducted on H1?
Item H1 was the first sample I took, a swabbing of a reddish-brown stain on the right leg of the sweatpants. I developed a two-person mixture. One of those two appeared to be male. I was one of those individuals contributed more DNA than the other, and I was able to determine a major female contributor, which again is that DNA profile from that one female individual who contributed the most DNA to the mixture. And I concluded that Taylorship Business is the source of that major female contributor DNA. I was also able to determine a minor male contributor DNA profile, and I concluded that Shad Therian is the source of that minor male DNA, so the lesser contributor of DNA to the mixture.
Yeah, and did you conduct a similar analysis on item H2?
Yes, item H2 was a swabbing of a reddish-brown stain on the left leg of the sweatpants. I again developed a two-person mixture, and one of those two was male. I was able to determine a major female contributor, and I concluded that Taylor Shabusiness is the source of that major female contributor DNA. I was also able to determine a minor male contributor, and I concluded that Shad Therian is the source of that minor male contributor DNA.
And again, those source attributions, is that because it's more than 1 in 7 trillion times more likely that it would be them than some other person?
So that 7 trillion number is not a likelihood ratio. It's a different type of stat. So it's a probability. So the probability of randomly selecting an individual from the population in general, that probability is more rare than 1 in 7 trillion. The probability of randomly selecting a profile that would match that evidentiary profile by chance.
Now, moving to item H3, which is the third swab from the sweatpants, you conducted a similar analysis, but the result ended up being a little bit different. Is that right?
Yes, this one was a little bit different. I developed a two-person mixture. At least one of those two appeared to be male. For this particular mixture, I analyzed using StarMix, assuming a two-person mixture. When I compared the DNA profile from Taylor Shabusiness, I found that it is at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe that DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Taylor Shabusiness and one other person than if it were a mixture resulting from two random unknown people. This provides very strong support for inclusion, or very strong support that DNA from Taylor Shabusiness is present in the mixture. I then compared the DNA profile from Shad Therian and also found that it is at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe that DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Shad Therian and one other person than if it were a mixture resulting from two random unknown people. That also provides very strong support for inclusion, or very strong support that DNA from Shad Therian is present in the mixture.
And Mr. Scott, can you explain why with this two-person mixture you used the StarMix to conduct your analysis as opposed to the sorts of source attributions that you did with the previous mixtures?
Yes, with the previous two mixtures, there was enough of a difference in the amount of DNA that was contributed by both, in which I was able to easily determine the profile from the major contributor and the minor contributor. With this third swabbing of the reddish brown stain on the left leg, H3, there wasn't as clear of a difference between the contributions of DNA between those two.
And then the final swabbing of the sweatpants, item H4, what was your analysis as it related to that item?
This item H4, another swabbing of a reddish brown stain on the right leg of the sweatpants. I developed a single source male profile, and I concluded that Shad Therian is the source of that DNA.
Move on to then item I1. What was item I, and then tell us what item I1 is.
So item I was the penile swabs from Shad Therian. Item I1 is the cutting that I took from that swab for the purposes of DNA analysis.
And what sort of analysis did you then conduct on that item?
I developed a single source male profile, and I concluded that Shad Therian is the source of that DNA.
And with respect to item J, what is that item?
Item J was a swab from a dildo.
And what sort of analysis did you conduct on that item?
I developed a three-person mixture. At least one of those three individuals was male. And I analyzed that mixture using StarMix, assuming three individuals. When I compared the DNA profile from Taylor Shabusiness, I found that it is at least 1 quadrillion times more likely to observe that DNA mixture profile if it is a mixture resulting from Taylor Shabusiness and two other people than if it were a mixture resulting from three random unknown people. that provides very strong support for inclusion or very strong support that DNA from tailorship business is present in the mixture. I then compared the DNA profile from Shad Therian, and I received an uninformative likelihood ratio. So uninformative just means that statistical values in that range have been observed both for individuals known to be in a mixture and individuals known to not be in a mixture. Therefore, no conclusion will be made regarding the presence of DNA from Shad Therian to that mixture. Essentially, there is no strong support that his DNA is there, and there's no strong support that his DNA is not there.
You're listening to True Crime Today in the Hidden Killers podcast, continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.